ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what a big sound. Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's Brian behind the glass, and it's a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Another day and another uniform leak? I guess this is more of a helmet leak, but this has been the, you had Nick Caserio talk earlier, and we'll get to some Nick Caserio sound. The Twitchers love Nick Caserio sound. But what's taken the, the atopic in the city when it comes to sports is that there is a new leak with the helmet. I think it's real. It looks real. Looks like guys are probably delivering it. And if you kind of add it up, this is supposed to be coming out next week. They would get these helmets out next week. No confirmation that it is real, but I'm pretty sure it's real. What'd you think of these helmets that have been leaked?
I don't like it. I was telling BMAC before the show, I'm like, if that is the H, it's better than the other H, and it's still not an H that I think anything great of. I'm highly disappointed. I saw your tweet. I give it 2. I mean, I'm just very unimpressed with that as an NFL helmet when you expect, like, I don't know if you expect dominance, class. There's certain ways logos can come across. You would think that whatever comes off that's going to be on an NFL helmet, it would be like boom, and that's solid. That's powerful. I'm kind of like, eh.
Yeah, I think I gave it. You gave it a 2. I think I gave it like a 2.3, something like that. And look, it's radio, so if you haven't seen this, we'll try to describe it as best as we can. It's a super dark blue. I think it's more navy blue or like midnight blue than it is black. I don't think it's black. I think it's a midnight blue.
This will piss people off. You know what it is, Jeremy? It's the Tennessee Titans blue on their blue helmet.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, that's
but,
a good
I mean,
call.
We expected them to use some version of Columbia Titans.
The light blue, yes.
This is
the
navy.
Dark blue, no.
Like the full helmet's like is a very dark blue. That's not H-Town blue or Lovey blue.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about
no,
the
we're not talking about
the
H yet. Just like the actual... The helmet, before you slap the logo on it, of course it's painted on there, but or maybe it's not actually painted. I think it is a sticker. But it's a very navy helmet to me. It almost looks like Rice's helmet, I think. Maybe even a little darker than that. It might be midnight blue, not navy blue. And then the side of it, at least the left side of it, I don't know what's on the right side of it because we don't see it. There's a lot of the internet people that are saying that there's a little bitty bull on the right side of the helmet, like just above like the neck area, like I guess behind the right ear. But the main logo is an old English H, so think like Yankees logo, think Tigers logo, think the Rice Owls logo. So it's that kind of font. It's old English font, and then the H is beveled, which I don't love bevel. It's got the H-Town blue, it's got a little bit of navy blue, and then it's outlined in red. And then there's a star to the right side of the H. So that's what the leak is out. I think that it is real. If I had my guess, and then the little bottom, like it's not the nameplate, it's like the little bottom part of the helmet on the back. It says H-Town. So yeah, I think that it's real. The logo to me, Blanker, screams like the greatest showman. Like it's kind of like carnival-y, circus-y to me, where it's like, hey, look at this, like giant thing, grab your attention, like create a team on Madden almost. Not a fan. Not a fan of this one.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it kind of comes across as it's not even – see, with the Rice R, I think that's more of that kind of old school. This one's got I don't know if it's the color, like you said, and the little red star on top of it, but it seems more like something you would see with a fan trying to create their first version of what they should consider – for and then leave it in the hands of the experts. It doesn't look like the finished product of a National Football League team where you go, boom, this is what everybody's going to be snapping up and running to get, and this is going to be this exudes NFL football. It just doesn't feel that way to me.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. It's definitely old English though. Like it is an old English font. The star to me.
What's the difference between that one and the first one that they were kind of leaking
I think
out on?
It's just maybe a little bit different. Like
a little wider.
It is different, though. You're right. Like the H that they had on the shirts and stuff,
yep.
There was like a little bit more curvature at the top of the H.
Right.
This is more – I think it's more Gotham-y to be honest with you, than that previous one. But have you seen the logo? What do you think? The logo on the side of the helmet, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We know that the Texans are getting four new uniforms. We've already seen one of them because it was leaked, the traditional but modernized. They're also going to have a traditional and classic, which I think is going to be very similar to the one that they leaked, but it's going to be a blue top. Then they have the bold bull, and then they have an H-Town and Tough. This is going to be the H-Town and Tough. At least that's what all my commenters are telling me. Mm-hmm. The bold bull, apparently, is going to be like a helmet with just horns, like red horns.
Like kind of like the Vikings?
That's what the commenters are telling me, yeah.
Because that's what the Vikings is, and a lot of people don't realize that at first glance, that it's supposed to be the non-three-dimensional look of the Viking horns on the Viking helmet, and it always looked to me like just some weird like swoosh version on the side of a helmet. It just, and then you finally go, oh, it's supposed to be a Viking. Man, I think they're overthinking this. Like, I like the red helmet with the bull head on it, if that's going to be like an upgrade, kind of a flashier version of one of the logos. But I think that if that's what they're doing, too, on top of this H, I'm going to be disappointed.
5718, it almost looks graffiti-ish. Helmet is fire emoji. This guy says, don't think this is real. Okay, what is the possibility that it's not real? Because it seems very real to me. It looks like these are being delivered. It looks like a warehouse to me. There's a bunch of different boxes. Obviously, you need to ship this out to the team. Like,
but
what
you're
is
only
the
seeing one helmet, though.
What is the percentage chance that this is... Yeah, but you're seeing the boxes with Riddle on the back.
Yeah, but you don't know what's in those boxes, though.
That's why I'm throwing the question out there.
I know, and I'm answering it. I think this... I don't think it's maybe the majority chance. I don't think it's above a 50% chance. But I think there's, 25, 30% chance that this is just a decoy helmet because we don't see what's in the other boxes. We only see this one.
But isn't there a chance... Like, Riddle makes helmets across the country for all different levels of football. They, high school, college... Whatever. I hope to God, for the sake of my feelings on what that helmet looks like, that that's some... I mean, I've got a buddy that I played college baseball with that has a minor league football team up in the Midwest that has, logos and on their helmets, that's kind of something like this, where I go, okay, let's hope to God that Riddle is making these helmets for somebody else.
It says H-Town.
But I'm trying to think, is there a high school in town or something that...
Like, these are pretty fancy for a high school.
Oh, so not just the H. There's an H-Town somewhere
on
the helmet?
On the back of the helmet where they have, like, the little white thing that, like, kind of comes out
the
bottom?
Where they had the messages
bottom. Right around the neck. Like, whenever the neck connects to your skull area.
Yep.
Yeah, where they had the messages, yes. Like, it says H-Town. Which high school is this for?
Yeah, I don't think it's for a high school, though I would say if you don't like the helmet, and I actually like it quite a bit more than you guys, but if you don't like it, I think the best case scenario for you guys is it's going to be a one-time-a-year helmet uniform. Because I think, Jeremy, you said it's part of like the Houston Tough.
I think so. If it is real.
So they're going to wear it once out of 17 games. I mean, you're not going to see it very often.
Yeah, what did you rate it, Ryan? We gave it a 2 and a 2.3.
Like a 6.8, 7.1, that range. It's not my favorite. It's not what I would, like if I were to design it, and I definitely agree with what you said, Jeremy, it does have a little bit of a Madden creator vibe to it, but I don't mind it overall. I like the script H, and I like the color scheme, so I don't hate it.
Yeah, 8711 looks like a mass production for a store bought. I like the helmet. The Old English takes me back to the classic baseball hats where Old English font is used. There is that. Someone asked, what gets released first, the new Texans uniforms or Jose Abreu? Texans uniforms.
I like that one.
I think the Texans uniforms will be released before Jose Abreu, although we can hold out hope. 9375, it looks cheap, like it was spray painted on the helmet.
It looks like you got a fantasy football league, and they gave you an option with every letter in the alphabet.
I don't think it looks cheap. I don't like it, per se, but I don't think it looks cheap. The thing that I like the most is actually the star. And I'm hoping that the star is actually paying homage to, like, the Gamblers. Like, if you look at the old Gamblers logo, they have the star in the middle. Like, it's a G with, like, the middle is, like, the state of Texas. And then there's a star, which the red, it's a red star. So, red was worn by the Gamblers. It is that star. It could very easily just be the Lone Star State, but I hope it has more meaning. Because, I don't love the look of it. But if you're tying together the H-Town blue because you're paying homage to the old Oilers, and you're tying together the Gambler's star in red next to it. I don't like the look, but I at least like the creativity.
Yeah, I look at it, and they're going to spin it just like they're going to call the colors a certain name, and they can spin it any way they want. I almost would like, if the star is going to be involved, I would like it to be a little bit more prominent. And I just feel like maybe it's the accents. Maybe it's the fact that, you know, my dad was a graphic artist, and I used to spend a lot of time with logos and things like that, and design logos even when I was in college. And I would think that something that it needs something to have that H kind of jump off the helmet more, maybe white or silver or an outline or something. I just think that it kind of blends into the helmet a little bit. The red seems like it's just all by itself out there at the end, and I'm going, yeah, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, remember whenever the white ones were linked, the new uniforms, and then, like, they looked really bad in the warehouse, and then you got it, like, with an actual, like, real photographer and, like, really good lighting, and it actually looked really good. I actually like the white jerseys. I don't like the horns on the shoulder, but I like the white jerseys. Maybe if these are the real ones, then they'll look better whenever they're, like, actually presented, like, in good lighting, modeled well, things like that.
And what you said, Jeremy, adds credence to the fact that there's probably going to be a helmet, just like the uniforms. That's what you're going to see. You're going to see just exactly that helmet, I mean, those horns that are on that jersey. That's probably what you're going to see on the sides of the helmet. It's going to look a whole hell of a lot like the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, because I hadn't put that together. Like, whenever people were saying that one, the bold bull, whenever they said that, I was like, okay, what is this going to look like? Is this going to be like a curl? Like, maybe even like a ram? You know, like the rams are kind of like curled.
Yep.
But I think you're onto something. I think it will look like the Viking. And I think there's going to be like red horns very similar to the Vikings, which – if that is the case, I'm not going to like those either.
Nope, me either.
I would say when the Texans were first unveiled, Bob McNair, way back, I guess it was 2000, 2001, he held up a white helmet with the Texans logo on it. So this might be, I think it's at least a possibility, a helmet they're just going to use on display for the press conference.
Well, that's
and
a
not
bit
the
different.
Helmet.
Like, that story's a bit different, because that was whenever they were awarded the franchise, right? Like, that was before they went through the entire process of, like, this is going to be our uniform. Like, that was a much different situation.
They at least had the logo, though.
But, that's what they were there for. I mean, I was at that logo unveiling downtown. The big thing was to let you know this was going to be your signature, you know, first piece of the puzzle for the team. That's why they did such a generic white helmet, I think, is because they hadn't gotten down to the brass tacks of uniforms. They just wanted you to notice on a white helmet, this is the logo.
Yeah, this is – so what was the possibility that you had it what did y'all say the possibility this is fake?
I don't think it's fake. I just
possibility. Like what?
It's
like,
yeah, like 30%.
Okay.
Because we don't see what's in the other boxes.
That's true. We don't. You're right. And it kind of looks like a stadium in the background, like an empty stadium that they're constructing.
It could be a helmet they put on sale just because there are – obviously, the text line has indicated this. There are a lot of people that do like that old English style. This could be a prop that they're actually going to sell in the store and not something the team's going to wear.
Not with all those boxes behind
them. But, again, we don't know what's in the boxes.
That's true. Whoever did this is getting fired, right? If it is.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, it looks like there's two people. Like, there's a guy holding it up, and then there's a guy taking the picture.
Taking the picture, yeah. I'm going to say that there's a 25% chance it's fake, and that might be high.
The guy that posted this follows me,
mm-hmm.
And I had communication with him today. Okay. I DM'd him, and he DM'd me back, but I'm not going to say anything more. I don't want to blast him. Well, he didn't say anything bad. He didn't say anything that could get him in trouble. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I'm going to put it at a 10% chance that it's fake, because there's always a 10% chance that somebody's bluffing. So 10%. Blankers, what did you say, 25?
25.
Yeah, 25. Okay, so we're over the place. It'd be funny if it is not real, just
be
because
very
everybody
happy
falls
if it was
for
not,
it.
If it was
but
fake.
But people also saw this. You know what I mean? Like they've already unveiled these uniforms to media and a few fans, and they swore them to secrecy, and no one's like, oh, yeah, these are fake. They're almost like confirming that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
but if they're sworn to secrecy, could they say it was definitely fake? Because then you're kind of, in a way, telling us what the uniforms at least aren't.
Yeah, I mean, you're onto something, but I think all bets are off once it's leaked, you know?
Maybe Cal and Hannah have a photo shoot planned for 5 p.m. tonight to get the real story out.
So,
real
Joel, hypothetically, if Cal is learning about this, how would Cal sound when he's responding to the news that the leak has happened?
This is one of those typical situations when a team wants to win every day and they want the uniforms to match the determination that a team has, and everyone is determined to be the first. We will be the last and the best, and we will show you when it's time what these uniforms are tough like us.
I think he would have. I think he would have put it on Reddit, and he hasn't done that.
So I said they got a photo shoot at 5 p.m. They're rushing to get through this. Better background, better look at it. Same logo.
Yeah. 713-780 ESPN. Do you have a hot take on these helmets? If it is indeed real, the Killer Bee's range is somewhere between 10% to 30% that it could be fake, but it seems like we think that it is real. All right, 713-780 ESPN. It's a busy show. It's a Thursday, so it's Bad Take Boulevard. What are the worst takes of the week? Nick Caserio, Texans general manager, has talked for the first time in quite some time. Talked about a very busy offseason. Got sassy with the media again. Why is Nick Caserio getting sassy today? NBA playoffs, how do we want things to go from a Rockets perspective, and do we even care from a Rockets perspective? What are the biggest lies told in sports? But coming up next, how many games back for the Astros before you start to worry? Maybe you're already worrying. 713-780-3776. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. You can find us on YouTube as well at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel on the Twitter. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Beast on ESPN975 and ESPN925. If you want things done right, call Third Rock Renewables. Are you sick of these potholes? Who isn't? You might have them in your driveway. Maybe you're a place of business. You have them in your parking lot, a lay-down yard, wherever you could get a pothole. And if you have a pothole, fix it for good. And fix it with Third Rock Renewable. Third Rock Renewables' patented technology, which is called mechanical concrete. It's the only low-cost, emphasis on low-cost, industrial-strength, sustainable base, which transforms these end-of-life tires into an indestructible building product. They're going to fix your potholes for good. Call Third Rock Renewable, 713-305-0507. Find out how mechanical concrete will cut your maintenance costs by 75% or more. They're going to save you tons of money, save you some green, and you're going to be green because you're going to lower your carbon emissions in the process. Fix these potholes once and for all and do it with Third Rock Renewables. Find them online, thirdrockrenewables.com, 713-305-0507. And if you mention ESPN, 20% off.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I would say that about 80% of the people don't like the helmet, if it is indeed real. It looks to me like the people do not like it.
I'm with them.
I am too. We agree. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Enough helmet talk for the day. We'll wait till next week to get the – maybe they are the real things. We'll wait till next week to get more, get confirmation on it. Interesting banner when it comes to the Houston Astros. Lots of people are feeling some sort of way, and I don't blame them. I mean, 6-14, this team is supposed to be a World Series contender, first-year manager. You have the drama in the front office. You have the back of baseball cards. You have a GoFundMe trying to pay Abreu's way out of town. Like, there's a lot of things going on with the Astros right now. It's been a heck of a 20 games, right? The poor record, all of the drama that surrounds it as well. I was, just looking at Twitter yesterday, and our guy Robert Flores, go Cougs, by the way, he was talking about the Astros, sounding off on the Astros, all good things come to an end, it didn't have to be this way, which I understand where he's coming from. You know, he could have just kept James Click and probably be just fine when it comes to a roster. I'm very curious what the roster would look like if Click never got let go. But then, as he was talking to a few of the commenters and a few of the fans of the Astros, he said, you can't win a division in April, but you can lose a division, which is like, okay, at the time the Astros were 4.5 back, Rangers won today, so the Astros are 5 back in the American League West. I think that kind of talk is really ridiculous after 20 games. You're only 5 games back. Like, it's a little bit early to be worried about losing the division. But what do you think the number is? What do you think the number is for the Astros to trail where you start to get a bit worried about where they are?
I think the easy answer is 10. I just think that that's an area that they haven't been in significantly to where you'd have to worry in years. And I think that 10 to me would say now the object in the Rangers rearview mirror is starting to fade. It's not larger than it seems. It's further away. I think that would be extremely worrisome to me to get to double digits, because I still believe in this team. I believe that there's help coming just by getting healthier with the pitching staff alone. And there's ways that this team can get better. So I would say that I'm not worried yet, though there is obviously concern watching this team on a day-in, day-out basis. And we talked about yesterday how they're finding new ways to lose. But, you know, I think that their run differential in the seventh inning and beyond is like 31-4. It's like they're getting crushed after leading or tied in games, to where I just believe that if you get some pitchers back off the IL, that I think that a lot of woes are going to cure themselves, and I think that they're going to be okay. But if I'm going to be truly concerned, they're going to get 10 back or more.
Yeah, it depends on where you're at in the calendar, too. Mm-hmm. You know, like, sure. You know, what's the games back with how many games you have left to play? What's the ratio when it comes to how many games back you are? Being this early in the year, you've played 20 games. You have 142 games left. Like, there is so much baseball left to play, and I don't think the Astros are the best versions of themselves yet. Like, there's a lot of things that are going to happen throughout the year for them to improve on their team. Now, there's injuries, too, so you want to dodge injuries, things like that. But you're getting Verlander back tomorrow. You're going to get Fromber back at some point. Who knows what happened with his elbow? I think he banged it on a table. Lance McCullers is a ways away. Luis Garcia is a ways away. But those guys, getting those two guys back will stabilize your pitching staff. Even if Justin Verlander isn't like Cy Verlander and he's pitching to like a 3.75 ERA, he's at least going to pitch you 5 or 6 innings and save the bullpen a bit. So it's going to stabilize the pitching staff. Same thing with Framber Valdez. You expect him to go deeper into games than you would expect Justin Verlander to go into games, depending, you know, where they're at in their stage of their career. Also, like at some point, there's going to be, you know, a straw that breaks the camel's back when it comes to the first base spot. Even if you don't DFA Abreu, maybe you DFA Singleton and you bring up a Loperfido. Maybe you start to get creative with other ways that you're, you know, playing that first base spot, whether it's Mauricio Dubon, who played a couple of times at first base last year. You know, not a great option, but a better option than what you have. Maybe it's Yiner moving over to first base, or it's Caratini moving over to first base. J-Lo, of course, in the minors. I don't think they're going to sign anybody. I don't think that they're going to add anybody to this team. But you do have some options, and I think at some point they're going to make a move. And we're already starting to see hints of this, too, by the way. I know that we bang on the Astros for saying back of the baseball card, but what has Espada done with Abreu? He's playing him less. He's basically splitting time mm-hmm. with John Singleton. He's batting eighth. He's getting pinch hit for late in games, not once but twice, by a guy named Victor Caratini and a guy named John Singleton. So the words are one thing. Like, you're going to back him. Like, you're going to say what you have to say publicly. We're all growing sick of the back of the baseball card thing.
History.
But in terms
of his baseball card.
You know, but it. Thank you, Joe. Sleepy Joe. But in terms of the actions, Joe Espada has actually started to take some action into a demotion of sorts for Jose Abreu.
Yeah, we talked about that. The fact that as much as other people want to nitpick the traditional versus non-traditional top of his lineup, the one thing that Dusty wasn't too keen on doing that Joe's already showed you that he's not afraid to do is take Abreu out of the sweet spot in that lineup and move him down, and move him down quickly, and not sit there and wait for him to hopefully just be having another one of those traditionally slow starts that he snaps out of, which last year took him till August to snap out of. You just see something totally different from a guy that realizes, hey, he sees the swings. He knows and sees way more than we do, and we see it. He's so far behind any kind of fastball, even a changeup looks like it's overpowering, and something needs to be done. Maybe it also takes some stress and pressure off of him, but it's also not just moving him down in the batting order. It's giving him more days off. It's not being afraid to sit him down. So I think that in itself lends itself to believe that this is organizationally something they're keeping a very close eye on. I'm sure Bagwell spent that time in the batting cages with him, because Bagwell knows a lot of this is on his shoulders too. And so maybe he's trying to make a last-ditch effort to try and help wherever he can. But it's a bad look that's only going to get worse, in my opinion, unless they do something. And maybe it is time to either tweak a back or just sit him down and make a move just to see, hey, because of the fact that all of this is coupled with this slow start, maybe giving a Loperfido a chance is the first internal option. If it's not, then start Dubon there, or start, you know, Yiner there and Caratini behind the plate. But start looking like even more you're going to take action, because you need to do what's right for this baseball team.
Yeah, I think it's getting there. I think that it's moving in that direction. I think all the signs of how they've actually used Abreu is moving that way. Abreu was fifth, I think, in the opening day lineup. Was he fifth or sixth? I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure he was fifth, maybe sixth.
I think he might have been sixth.
Five or six.
Yeah.
I mean, that's middle of the order, right? Four, five, six. So middle of the order on opening day. He's hitting eighth. He's hitting in the bottom of the order now. He's playing less. He's getting pinch hit for late in games. Like, it is moving in that way when it comes to Jose Abreu. We just don't like the, I guess, how slow it's taking. And then we're tired of the excuse. We're tired of the back of the baseball card. Like, yes, they're not going to publicly scorn Jose Abreu, but the same excuse, you know, universally throughout the entire organization gets tired. As far as the games back thing, like, if you're within single digits until, like, June, July, I'm not too worried. Oh, that's kind of high, maybe above seven. This might surprise some people. I just pulled this up. It surprised me a little bit. The Astros last year, they trailed the division by 6.5 games on June 24th. 6.5 games on June 24th, they trailed the division. They came back and they won the division. So am I freaking out about 4.5, 5 games when you haven't had Verlander and you haven't had Fromber? I'm not freaking out.
No, I think, and to correct me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, but wasn't there a point later in the year, too, where either they lost, because I don't think they, maybe they lost a series to the Rangers that they felt like was a big, big series, or they lost and the Rangers won, and it was at a point where we were like, well, the division's probably out of reach now, and I want to say it was later than the All-Star game, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, they win the division on the final day, and you're like, whoo, didn't see that coming. So it's not insurmountable by any way, shape, or form. There's still way too much baseball to be played. And I think that, yes, I understand that the fear mongers and the orange Kool-Aid drinkers are already freaking the hell out. But I think that if you just watch baseball enough, you realize, one, there's too much talent on this team. Two, there's help coming, you know, along the way in different spurts, you know, throughout the season where you get more arms back. But that you just, it's too early to freak out.
Yeah, I think so, too. 0754, I'm kind of worried the clubhouse looks deflated. Wish they would bring up that Italian fella to play first. Maybe they would light a fire under Jose's bad word. I saw a lot of people taking the Alex Bregman postgame interview that he had, the scrum, and they're like, oh, this is an issue. No one's happy, all of these things. Like, to me, just look like a player after a loss. Like, I'm not worried about the clubhouse being torn down. I think that's a massive reach.
Well, I mean, what's the alternative? Do you want them to be having club Astros, and do you want them to be celebrating with smiles on their faces going, hey, it's early, we're good, woo! I mean, you want guys that know that they just got swept by a really good baseball team, but that in each and every game, they had a shot. They were in it. And so they should be grinding their gears even more, and they should be pissed off that they didn't get at least a win or two, and they know they're close. So I'm happy that they're not happy. I don't want them to sit there with, you know, smiles on their faces, appeasing the media with cheery answers. I want them to be pissed off and trying to figure things out themselves.
This texter says they need Danny Rojas. Name the show. Name the show.
You know
where is
me.
Danny
I'm
Rojas
out.
From? Brian?
Name sounds familiar, but I don't know.
He's from Ted Lasso.
Football is life. I haven't seen it. Yeah,
football is life.
It.
Yeah, they need it. Baseball is life. They need that Danny Rojas. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. The problem with the Astros is they failed to keep Dusty Baker, and now all Joe Espada can think of is to save his bad word is check the back of the baseball card. Okay. Like,
we're going Espada at Joe again.
Espada, the back of the baseball card.
Espada is doing things that is more aggressive in his handling of Abreu than Dusty was. And I'm not saying that Espada is an upgrade over Dusty. That's not what I'm saying. But Dusty rode Abreu forever, or Espada is being a lot more active in moving him down the lineup and playing him less.
So who coined that? Who was the first we heard of using that phrase? Jeff Bagwell, right?
I don't know if there was – I thought it was Bagwell. There's some people that are saying that it was Dana Brown in the offseason, but I think it was Bagwell last year. I think it was during the broadcast last year.
I think
year.
It was, too. That's the first time I heard it. And he continued it on after when we were talking about the signing of Abreu and other things. The point being, and even if it was Dana, that still lends it to my point, which is Joe Espada right now, for all those people that are pointing a finger at Joe Espada and wanting to blame Joe Espada, more so than ever before, and especially in the Dusty Baker era – Joe Espada right now is a front man for that committee, that crane gang that's up there in the front office doing things. Because if those two guys were the first that we heard to back a baseball card, and now suddenly it's coming out of your manager's mouth, it means that there's been a lot of use of that phrase in a lot of meetings with a lot of the crane gang that Joe's probably involved in. And he's probably echoing their sentiments. That's why, as much as everybody wants to point a finger at Joe Espada, he's easily manipulated. This is his first go-round. He wants to appease everybody. He's not Dusty Baker. And Dusty was the pushback guy. I just feel like Joe Espada right now is doing a whole lot of listening.
Joe Espada is doing things with Jose Abreu that Dusty Baker did not do, though. Like, talking about it publicly is a lot different. But, yes, he's towing the company line, saying back of the baseball card. But he has been far more aggressive in one, not playing Abreu, moving him down to the lineup, and then pinch hitting for him late.
But Jeremy,
like, if anything, Espada is the one that's pushing the action more than Dusty was when it came to
Abreu. I'll say this, though, just to respond to that, I'll say that. Just like when we talk about Dana Brown, we don't know what we don't know about how much control he actually has, to the same degree of saying we don't know if Dana, who figured out, and we've got bits and pieces in quotes in the media, that, you know, he makes suggestions, but Dusty controls the lineup card.
Well, Dana said that Espada controls the lineup.
I think that until we know, there's a chance that Dana and or others could be sending the messages down to Joe.
Well, how would we know?
But I'm saying the way that Dusty had that, and he was adamant about it. You got a guy that's easier to manipulate now because it's his first time on the job, and it's a guy that, you know, he's happy. It seems like he's happy to get the gig as opposed to a legendary guy like Dusty Baker.
But
I can see that.
That's a contradiction, though, because you're saying that it's the company line to protect Abreu, and Espada's doing more things that lead to less at-bats for Abreu than Dusty did. It's the opposite.
But I think both can be true. I think that they can say, hey, for right now, this is what we want to do, and this is how we want to do it. And so we're going to slide him down in the lineup. We're not going to play him as often. But I think that Joe Espada, in his comments, when he hears that from those two guys and other guys probably in a room, it's pretty easy to echo those sentiments publicly, to where I just don't think that Joe Espada has the kind of control and management power that Dusty had. And maybe that they, you know, this committee is doing a whole lot with more than just Dana Brown.
Yeah, I'm not buying this one.
You don't have to. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's more of a theory, right?
I mean, whatever you want to call it, I could see it
so
happen.
So what's the theory? You think Dana's making the lineup?
I think that Dana's not making suggestions. I think he's more so telling Joe to do things.
So he's saying bench Abreu, but then protect him in terms of when you're speaking about him?
I think from a company standpoint, you know, you're paying him a lot of money. You don't want to be completely down on him. You can't just completely crush him. So I think maybe that there's some management on how you handle the media. But I think that overall, I think that Dana probably had a say so in sliding him in the lineup and sitting him more.
Yeah, I'm trashing that. Do you believe Dana has
trash?
Do you think that he's moving Dana Brown is moving Jose Abreu down? 713-780-3776. I'm curious what the other people have to say, because maybe you're right, or at least that's more of, you know, more than just your opinion.
And the reason why it started too is because people want to blame Joe Espada for everything, not, you know, the injuries and the players and all the other things that we've been talking about.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. Also, let's be super optimistic about the Astros. Everybody's tearing down the Strohs. Killer Bees like to be different. Let's be super optimistic about the Strohs. What do you got? What do you got in terms of optimism for the local nine? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, before we go to the break, a word for Doc Linville. Doc Linville has the NeoGraft procedure. He's the best in the business at doing it, in my opinion. And he can do it for you, too, just like he did it for me. And the fact is that Doc called up to the office one day. He said, hey, if Joel's around, I want to meet with him one day. I want to run by something that I've been thinking about. So I sat down and met with him. And he told me about the NeoGraft. And he told me, hey, look, you got a full head of hair on the sides and the back, up on top. But he's like, your hairline, it's reducing. It's going more up towards the top of your head. He goes, I can get it back for you. So I listened. I'm like, okay, cool. That's something it's going to catch my ear. And the more he explained the NeoGraft procedure and the fact that it's your real hair and he takes it from places where genetically you're never going to lose it, which I didn't know, the sides and the back of your head, you're always going to have hair no matter how bald you go elsewhere. And he could take some of that hair every third or fourth follicle. He can move it where you need it most. And because you're never going to lose it, wherever he puts it, the chances are it's going to stay, grow, be with you for the long haul and give you a whole better appearance and look and coverage. The fact is, with me using that to turn my 8 head back into a 4 head, he moved follicles. He did the procedure. It was literally painless for me. And in 6 to 9 months, I saw the full results. But right away, you could see the follicles. They're there. They ain't going anywhere. They're growing. And you can see them in the mirror every day. He told me 95 to 99%, really realistically, of those follicles never are going to fall out or go away. And it's like planting grass. The minute that he reseeds them and plants them, they start developing roots. When they're in, and they're good to go, and then they get stronger and longer, and you see better results as time goes by. You can get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff right now to figure out if the NeoGraft might be right for you, too, without paying a dime or signing on the dotted line. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, sign up for your first consultation. Go in, ask questions, get answers, have them explain everything to you, and see if it's right for you, too. It was right for me. I can't rave about them enough, but you can find out for yourself it's something you might want to do. I encourage it because I've seen great results. So have a lot of others. You could be next in line. Check out 975hair.com right now.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's be optimistic about the Astros. 713-780-ESPN. What is your optimism for the Stros? 713-780-3776. Before that, though, 4-2-3-1, do you think maybe we should move Altuve 2 or 3 in the batting order, possibly produce more runs, or would you leave him batting first?
I personally would leave him batting first. I like him there. With the multi-hit games and the three-hit games and everything he does, I think he still sets the table. He also still gets, you know, production with pop. And the other options that I could think of right now I don't think are better to hit leadoff. So I would keep him there, though I would wonder if Jeremy Booth would feel like that's another move that they need to make as well. But
Jeremy,
I'm not,
Branham does. It's like I'm not dying on that Taos Hill. But Jose Altuve hits a lot of home runs and drives in very few runs. You mentioned the power. Like, okay, well, that's reason maybe to slide him down a couple spots. He has 5 homers with 7 RBIs. Like, use his power whenever there's guys on base, et cetera, et cetera. Now, he doesn't always hit very good with runners in scoring position, things like that. So, like, I don't really care about batting order a whole lot. I think we make much ado about nothing. I think the very best batting orders versus just, like, drawing a name out of a hat is the difference between about 10 runs a year. And probably not even the difference between 1 win or less, more or less. So I think that we overrate. Now, it's great banter. It's great conversation, obviously, but it's overrated.
Look, Pumpkin, there's things that need to be done to this lineup, and sooner rather than later, okay? You're not understanding what it means to have Yordan in the cleanup or the third hole.
He's not in the – he's in neither.
But I'm just saying, I mean, you know, that's Jeremy Booth's mantra. Call him a pumpkin. Call everybody pumpkins and tell him where he should be hitting.
Yeah, I mean – I don't hate the idea of Altuve not batting leadoff. That said, I don't care if he does hit leadoff. The home run to the RBI thing, that's not great because you're not really taking advantage of his power as much.
Well, who do you put there?
7 RBIs.
Who do you move there?
I mean, I think you have a couple of options. If Pena continues to – and I know he was the ire of a lot of people yesterday – but if Pena continues to get on base at a high level, you know, he would be an option. Alex Bregman's off to a terrible start. Yes, he's slow, but, you know, baseball doesn't really care about speed in the leadoff spot anymore. See Kyle Schwarber. Alex Bregman, aside from speed, Alex Bregman has everything you want in a leadoff. He's a high contact guy. He's got a very good eye. He sees a lot of pitches. You want your leadoff guy traditionally to see a lot of pitches. That way the rest of the lineup can take a look at the pitcher and get an idea of what he's going to throw. Bregman's a good on base guy. So Bregman's a guy that I've always kind of liked in that role. Kyle Tucker would give you like a George Springer type, but at the same time, well, now you're looking at a situation where you're probably taking away his RBI chances. So Bregman would be the natural one for me, and then if Pena just continues to be what he's done the first 20 games of the year, he's more of an outside the box candidate.
No, I was just curious because slow start Bregman is starting to heat up, so I thought that might be a way you lean. I'd be okay with that. Tucker starting to heat up as well. So those are two viable candidates. I wonder about moving Pena and giving him the extra at bats instead of, somebody else where we know how critical sometimes that one extra at bat can be for the big four or five guys in your lineup.
Well, it depends on what numbers you're valuing. If you're valuing them as in their careers, then Jeremy Pena batting high in the order is silly. It's ridiculous because he doesn't have a very good on-base percentage, things like that. But if you're valuing their first 20 games of the year, Jeremy Pena has your fourth best on-base percentage.
The other thing, too, that we all know is that sometimes, you need a kickstart. You need to stir things up. And sometimes you know, you can stir things up by doing something like that. It doesn't have to be set in stone for the rest of the year, but if it works, even if it's in small doses or it kickstarts the offense, then you just see how long it keeps going, and you can always make changes again. But, I mean, a team that starts this slow, I don't think anything should be off the table in terms of, like, stirring it up a little bit to try and figure out if there's a better lineup that can score more runs.
No, I wouldn't do anything different right now. Like, it kind of leads to panic. They already tinkered with Bregman and Tucker. I would just let it roll for a little bit. 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the optimism on the other side. 713-780-3776. What are you super optimistic about when it comes to the Astros? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Blank. I am Branham. What is your optimism? Look, all these other radio shows in this city, and there's good ones out there. We know that you move the dial. We know that you move around. We know that you listen to a bunch of different talk radio in the city. You probably listen to all of them in some shape or form. They're all so negative. Can you believe how negative everybody is? We're never negative on the Killer Bees. We're always super positive. If one of the things that you can use to describe our show, those guys are always glass half full. They're always super optimistic about Houston sports. So let's do that, because we gotta do what we gotta do. We gotta keep that that gimmick alive. We got to keep what the people think of us. Kenneth on the Twitter, I'm optimistic by the end of Espada's first season, he'll have a higher winning percentage than Dusty in his first season as Astros manager. Cash it or trash it?
What was Dusty's winning percentage his first year would be?
I'm cashing it. Cash it.
That means he had a bad first year.
It was 29-31. It was the COVID year.
I figured it was the COVID year. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll cash it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Espada will be 500 or better.
Oh, for sure.
So that's the kind of optimism we're looking for. Thank you, yeah. Kenneth. That's the optimism we're looking for. 713-780-ESPN.
I'll go even further. I think Joe Espada will have the Astros more than double the win total for the Astros in Dusty Baker's first season.
More, okay, yeah. Will he be 58? Three times
It may be
more,
a hot
though.
Take, but I'm sick. I'm standing by it.
For that math, Blankers, yes, it's yep. 58.
Hey, I'm not Joe George. Slow down.
Three times as much, though.
I caught a Joe Georgeism again today, if we're going to use that for math. He said, when they were talking about Abreu, he still has 80% of his contract to play.
That's not true.
That's not true.
No.
Yeah. It would be under 66.
Yes,
probably
it would.
About 65%.
Yeah. Yes. 60 he's winning 20%. Give him he's getting close.
It was a three-year contract, and he's obviously played more than a third of it, so it has to be below 66.
It'd be less than 66.
Like 80%. There you go.
Ooh, that's a bad look by Joe. Math's not his forte, though.
No, but it just isn't.
You know what? You know what's funny, though, is that, like, we all know our weakness. Everybody has weaknesses. Like, we're human beings. Everybody has weaknesses, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Math, spelling, pronunciation. Like, everybody has weaknesses.
Sensitivity. Yep.
Anger. Like, that mm-hmm. stuff exists with everybody.
Analytics.
We're human. Nobody's perfect. But usually you try to stay away from your weaknesses. Joe's not bashful going to his. Joe thinks he's a mathematician. He thinks he's Albert Einstein. And it's really one of the weaknesses. You got to know your strengths.
Joe definitely is the master of analytics. I mean, he's mastered that. And instead of just going, you know, there's a good portion of his contract left to be played. Nope, there's 80%.
5162, nope, only listening to 97.5 and 92.5. Well, there you go. We appreciate
Smart.
That.
5, we love 6, you. 2.
All right, so what is your reason for optimism when it comes to the Houston Astros, Blankers?
I think there's a laundry list. I think the fact that Alex Bregman hopefully has kind of moved on from his...
You're leading with Alex Bregman.
Lift it and ride it out of here. I think that, you know, he started to look like he's coming out of it because you need him at the top of your lineup. The big things for me that I've stated all along is... There's too many games to be played and too many good players that are still going to be coming back to this team to think that this roster, this team is dead or in trouble or, you know, completely to be written off. I think that you've got too good of a lineup and your two main cogs have been doing their thing with Yordan and Altuve. And now to add Bregman and Tucker that look like they're both heating up. The other positives are, hey, look, Jeremy Pena, who you didn't know what to expect from, is looking like he's better than he's been his first 2 years offensively. That's a positive. So you add him to the list. Yiner playing every day still looks like he's going to be a guy that's going to be way better than your previous starting catcher. So, I mean, the list for me of positives is probably longer than some people, but I'm so in belief that this team is not going to do anything but win the division and come back, that I see the light at the under the tunnel getting brighter every day.
Yeah, I'm more optimistic about the Astros' offense, but I do think the pitching is going to improve just because you're adding pieces kind of staggered throughout the entire season. Verlander tomorrow, Fromber hopefully, you know, they said before Mexico. And then Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers in the summer, knock on wood.
When is Urquidy coming back?
Yeah, I didn't even mention Urquidy. Urquidy's been thrown off the mound.
Oh,
so
good.
A month-ish, maybe? Maybe he's back by
mid-May. And I didn't
mean
that towards you. I haven't heard a whole lot of, like...
I saw something on Twitter yesterday where he and Luis Garcia were off the mound.
Oh, good.
Yeah, which is... that was cool. I think Luis Garcia is ahead of schedule, which is good.
You're
adding another piece. But the offense, to me, has actually been pretty good. Mm-hmm. The problem has been you haven't hit with runners in scoring position. Situational hitting has been kind of poor, like Pena yesterday in the 10th. You have first and third one out. You ground into a double play. We've mentioned it a few times with Bregman, like first and third, second and third, and you're, you know, hitting an infield pop-up. Like, the situational hitting has been bad. That's why the Astros haven't scored runs. Situational hitting, poor in runners in scoring position. But overall, the offense has actually been pretty good. Like, the raw numbers, they're 769 OPS is tied with Baltimore for the best OPS in all of the American League. Like, that's a positive sign that the offense is good. They're just not clicking on all cylinders, and the situational hitting and runners in scoring position has been poor, very, very bad, and they got to get better in that aspect. Brian, you have any optimistic takes for the Astros?
Yeah, a couple. 086 and 154. Those are the ERAs of Christian Javier and Ronel Blanco. They've been absolutely fantastic. I think a lot of us saw this coming from Christian Javier. Obviously, we didn't see it coming from Ronel Blanco.
You did.
Well, not Ronel Blanco.
No,
I saw
Javier.
It coming from Javier. So they've been absolutely fantastic. And as you guys have mentioned, you're going to get Verlander back. You're going to get Fromber back. Luis Garcia's tossing from a mound. So he, you know, maybe he's ahead of schedule as well. Is the Astros' biggest problem is what we've seen is these super short outings from Hunter Brown and Spencer Arrighetti, Blair Henley, or whoever that was in the call-up from AAA. Well, if you continue to get the starts from Javier or Ronel Blanco, obviously their ERA is going to go up a little bit, but if they still continue to pitch up well and you add guys like Verlander and Fromber to that, I think what's caused the Astros to be in this spot, the bad starting pitching outside of Blanco and Javier, is really going to get fixed in a big way.
Yeah, that's been a very positive thing. And if you, like you mentioned, you can add some pieces around those guys, all of a sudden your starting rotation goes from kind of dicey. You're hoping that they get out of three or four innings, and then all of a sudden Verlander pitches pretty good. Fromber is Fromber. You added that to Javier and Blanco, who probably aren't going to sustain these numbers, let's be realistic. But if they're quality, you're looking at four quality starters before you get back Urquidy, before you get back Garcia, before you get back Lance McCullers. Hopefully Hunter Brown gets better. He was much better in his last start than two starts ago. And then same thing with J.P. France. Yep. I think that is a good call with a reason to be optimistic about the Astros starting rotation. Joseph on the YouTube, the team can go 20-5 in a heartbeat once Verlander and somebody else steps up. Presley's made pressure on himself, being he isn't the closer. Can't explain Hader, but please bench Abreu. I think he's talking about Jose Abreu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. I think this team can win a bunch of games in a short period like that. I don't think 20-5 in a 25-game stretch is out of the realm, and I actually expect them to do it at some point.
No, I look at the schedule, too, and you had such a hellacious start in terms of the teams you played. It's going to lighten up no matter what, but I saw some graphic the other day about this stretch going forward over the next, I think, month or so, but it's really going to be a more conducive schedule for them and an easier schedule. And the Cubs are playing good baseball right now, but when you start mixing in Washington and the Rockies and teams like that, you can get fat and happy and hopefully get, you know, healthy along the way to where you can get more close to doing something like that to turn it around. And again, that's why I'm positive about this team.
Poncho says, reason for optimism, there's still 142 games to make up for a sloppy no team chemistry start. I think that chemistry stuff's overrated. I don't think this team has a chemistry issue. It's just that they're losing. If the Astros, what are they? They're 6-14. If they were 14-6 and everything else was the same, would we be saying this team has chemistry issues?
Not at all.
That's one of those things that you throw in based on if you're winning or you're losing. Some really good chemistry teams are bad, but, oh, that team doesn't have chemistry. They actually do. They're just not a very good team. A couple on the text line, 713-780-3776. A texter says, third in the league in OPS. That's overall. They're tied for first in the AL. He says, average homers, starting pitching minus couple of hiccups have been great. Big three at the end can't continue with a six ERA. So law of averages there. You don't expect Hader, Abreu, and Presley to have an above six ERA the rest of the year. And if they get back down to earth, their norm, it means they're going to be pretty good the rest of the way.
Yeah, I have no reason not to believe that Hader's numbers over his career, that he's not, when we start going, you know, falling back to the norm or getting into who he really is. I think once he really gets settled in here, and we've talked about when Michael Bourne talks about, when we were talking about Abreu, ironically, hey, when a guy is in a certain locker room for a while and then he leaves, the culture shock and the change and everything like that, it takes time for a guy to really truly feel like he's comfortable. I have no reason to believe that Hader's not going to go back to who he was prior to being an Astro. I believe that Abreu the same way and Presley the same way. They're just – Abreu may be less of a sample size than Presley, but I believe those guys are going to be who we thought they were going to be at the back end of the bullpen. It's just kind of improving everybody other than those three guys and maybe a Montero because of the fact that we know how important the non 7-8-9 guys could be for a team. We're seeing it.
Yeah, so, and Hader was dominant yesterday. I mean, yep. He sure got the side. So, like, okay, cool. Like, be that guy.
If you're saying Hader, Presley, and Abreu are going to get back to who they have been before, would you then say...
You know, the back of his baseball card.
Sounds like you're saying back of his baseball card.
Yeah, but, I mean, Abreu's still in the prime. Is Hader.
Yeah,
and Presley. Yeah. Presley, you can make the case of getting a little up there in age to where maybe he's not going to pitch to the back of his baseball card. But I would say that Hader and Abreu should pitch to the back of their card. Now, they're rough starts. It's going to be tough for them to match their ERAs from a year ago. But I'm talking about this point going forward, you know, subtracting the first 20 games of the year.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at the back of the baseball card.
You know, the back of his baseball card.
With Hader, and that's why I said you look at a guy that's been dominant his whole career, and he's not 38 or 36 or falling off a cliff age-wise, and his fastball's still what it's supposed to be. I mean, when you're looking at Abreu, he's having a hard time swinging out of a wet paper bag.
Yeah, he couldn't break glass with a baseball bat. 6'9", 6'7", my oldest daughter is 7. She has never not seen an ALCS. She's 7-for-7. I'm 8-for-36, better than Abreu. The Stros are naturally her favorite team. She told me yesterday they will turn it around. I can't doubt her. She's batting 1,000. Good call. That's a great point. You can never doubt that. 60-30, he was always, he's always the rainbow
fest
and the sunshine. Yeah. He says, I'm optimistic about what we can get in trade packages for Bregman and Tucker. Throw Chaz in there, too. So not only is he throwing Chaz in there, too, but he's also throwing the white flag on the Astros season.
Solid. Yeah, that's expected.
Someone texted in your joke, Brian. When you say over their career, you mean like the back of their baseball card.
You know, the back of his baseball card.
We picked up Hader, lost two close. Look at this optimism just turning into negativity in less than 10 minutes. Unbelievable. 713-780.
It's not us, it's them.
Nick Caserio, Texas general manager, talking ahead of next week's draft, talked about some of the moves that he's made in the offseason as well, and he got sassy, too. He got sassy with the media again. Also, he did say something that the favorite thing that I liked, at least from what Caserio had to say. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Think about this. Think about a backyard with Sinlon. It's perfect all the time. You had a rainstorm yesterday. Don't have to worry about it because you have Sinlon and it's perfect. It's dried out, no mud. Kids can go play. It's one thing that happens here, you know, everywhere. When rain comes down and it soaks your yard, it's wet and it's muddy for a day, 2 days, 3 days, depending on how much rain there is. Sinlon's almost back to good right away. So the kids can go out and play immediately. You don't have to worry about mud. Don't have to worry about the kids getting dirty and bringing that mud in. You don't have to worry about the dogs going out to do their business, bringing all that dirt back in as well. Sinlon is the perfect yard, and it's perfect year-round. It's always green all throughout the calendar year. Stop wasting your valuable time dealing with your yard. Stop wasting your time looking out in the backyard. I mean, man, I wish it looked better than it did. Whether it's the weeds, whether it's the dead spots, sometimes it's out of your control, like the mud we were just talking about. Stop worrying about all that and get Sinlon. Sinlon, you can get the beautiful yard year-round, and you can also get your weekends back because you're not worried about watering the lawn, not worried about mowing it, or how about those chemicals you have to put in your yard to kill all the weeds? Don't do that because you can have sin lawn in your life. Stop mowing. Stop pulling weeds. Stop throwing money into an ugly yard that, quite frankly, you're embarrassed of people seeing anyways. You don't have people over. You don't have friends because you don't have a good yard. Well, fix that with Sin Lawn, the best artificial grass on the market. Sin Lawn offers the lifetime warranty. Products that are made in the USA. You don't have to worry about any of that. The people are elite. Customer service fantastic. Fully insured. Fully bonded. And also, one of my favorite things, they have their own in-house crews. They don't contract a single thing out, which can always be a nightmare. I'm sure you've had to deal with that. Sin Lawn's number one priority is making their customers happy, and they're great at it. Sin Lawn is perfect for your yard, whether it's the patio, the kids' playground. You probably have kids. You have the pets. Stop tracking the mud inside. Or how about that putting green that you've always wanted? Head to 975sinlawn.com to learn more. That's 975sinlawn.com to get started on that yard of your dreams. Do not wait. Sin Lawn, control the process from yard to yard.